just now come from that period of time, those 7 days and seven nights in which he was mourning those events that took place in his life. And that brings us up to chapter 3. Okay? Chapter 3, Job chapter 3. Job now is beginning to speak for the first time. And remember, his friends are there. Eliphaz is there, Bildad and Zophar. And they have been with him for those 7 days and seven nights, and they came for the sole purpose of being a comfort to him. And now they're beginning to prepare themselves for Job speaking for the very first time since all of these things happened in his life. And as evidenced by the things that they have said and what they have known about this man, they could not have been prepared for what he is about to say. Again, keep in mind, we're talking about a man that God says is his servant and that he is blameless and he's upright. But he has just went through two of what has to have undoubtedly been the worst days of his life. And look how he starts this out. Job chapter 3. He says in verse 3, "May the day perish on which I was born and the night in which it was said a male child is conceived." Job starts out by saying that I wish I was never born. And then he makes several references to the night and darkness. Look in verse 4. May the day be darkness, nor the light shine upon it. Verse 5. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, may darkness seize it. He also says in verse number 10, because it did not shut up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide the sorrow from my eyes. All of these things in regards to darkness, he's saying that I want it to be so dark that God himself would not have been able to look down upon the earth and allow that day to even happen. Here's a man that is hurting. Here's a man that in all of our minds we understand depression to a certain extent. But here's a man that has had allowed himself to sink so low that he not only says, I wish I was not born, but even though I made it through the birth, why couldn't I have not been stillborn? Why couldn't I have not died when I came out of the womb so that my eyes would not have seen these atrocities? I would not have this sorrow on me. I would not have all of this pain within me. Look in verse number 7. He says, "Oh, may that night be barren. May no joyful shout come into it." Verse 6, above in verse 6, he says, "May it not rejoice among the days of the year. May it not come into the number of the months." He says, in regards to my day of birth, I want it to be ripped from the calendar. I don't want you to celebrate the fact that I was born, that I'm even on this earth. You're talking about a lot of pain. You're talking about somebody that has lost everything that has been near and dear to him. But yet, keep in mind, who remembers the challenge that Satan made to God? What was the challenge made? That he would do what? He would turn against him. And what would he do in regard? How would he show God? He would curse him to his face. Okay? This is what he said. This is what Satan said. If you take these things away from him, Satan says, God, you've given him this protection. You've put these things around him. He doesn't want for anything. He's a rich man. You know, he's a pretty smart man because evidently he had to be smart just the mere fact of all the possessions that he had. But he says that if you take those things away from him, he will curse you to your face. Round one went to who? Went to God, right? Round two, as we're going to notice here, also goes to God. He begins in verse number 11 to change things a little bit. Okay? He begins now to turn toward God in the way of accusations. But understand that he never turned away from God. And we're going to see that throughout this lesson, throughout this class. He turned toward God by questioning him. And from verses 11 through 26, he says, why? He asked the question, why, seven times. Isn't that the attitude of a lot of people today? You know, when something happens in our life that we don't have to necessarily not understand it. We can understand it, but we still ask why. And it gets to the point, if it's not, why did God do this to me? Well, why did God allow this to happen to me? And we said a couple weeks ago that Satan gets a free pass. You know, nothing's ever his fault in the way of the world. You know, it's either God, you did it to me, or you allowed it to happen to me. Did God do any of this, of these terrible things that happened in the life of Job? Was God responsible for it? No. Did God allow it to happen? Yes. For what purpose? To prove that he was his servant. What does James say? Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing what? That the testing of your faith produces patience. He didn't say count it all joy when you want to. Count it all joy when it's convenient. You know, when there's a little bit of pain, when there's just, you know, that much that I can handle, that's when you should be joyous. No, he said anytime you fall into those various trials, count it all joy, because you're going to come through this and you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Now, here's Job. He's going through a rough period in his life. He says, why did I not die at birth? Why did I not perish when I came from the womb? Why did the knees receive me? Or why the breast that I should nurse? Verse 16. Why was I not hearing like a stillborn child? Verse 20. Why is light given to him who is in misery? Verse 23. Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden? This is a man, and I say again, who is in a lot of pain. Jeremiah, when he was persecuted, when he was mocked, he made some of the same statements. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 20. Jeremiah chapter 20. We'll see that Jeremiah had the same mindset as Job when he was going through rough periods in his life. Jeremiah chapter 20, and we'll start in verse number 14. Jeremiah 20, verse 14. He says, cursed be the day in which I was born. Let the day not be blessed in which my mother bore me. Let the man be cursed who brought news to my father, saying, a male child has been born to you, making him very glad. And let that man be the city, like the cities which the Lord overthrew and did not relent. Let him hear the cry in the morning and the shouting at noon, because he did not kill me from the womb, that my mother might have been my grave, and her womb always enlarged with me. Why did I come forth from the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame? Go back to Job. Here are two men at stages in their life in which they have been painfully entrenched from within. They have been two men that have sunk so low that they deplore the day that they were even born. But yet, neither one of these men ever says, I'm going to take my own life. Not one of them. Both of those men realize the importance of life that was given by God. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever had to deal with depression, deep depression, either in a very personal way or whether or not you've known someone that has been in a very depressed state. But I can say to you, I can stand before you and I can say, in all honesty, a person that decides to take their own life. A person that even thinks about not even wanting to be born, or even not thinking of how to do it, but just thinking of taking their own life, is not in their right mind. That's not a rational mind. That is not someone who's thinking in a way that we can say that person knows exactly what they're doing. Here is a person that is responsible, yes, number one, for their own actions. But you realize that the amount of pain and suffering that has to go into a mind to say that I'm going to take my own life. You realize how low a person has to be in their life to even think about it. And I just don't see Job, as deep as he was, the scriptures do not show me that he got so deep that he said, I am going to take my own life. He says now, death can take me out of this pain. That's what he says. But he says, I'm not going to do it. He says he makes several references. Look up in verse number 21, back in chapter 3. He says that I long for death. Who long for death, but it does not come and search for it more than hidden treasures? He wants to die. And then we go back and we see why he wants to die. Look in verse 14. He says that there are kings and counselors of the earth who built ruins for themselves, or with princes who have gold who fill their houses with silver. Or why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, like infants who never saw light? There the wicked cease from their troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There are prisoners rest together, do not hear the voice of the oppressor. The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Job seems to think in some way that death is going to allow him to escape all of this pain. That once I die, what? I'm going to be all right. These things will not be on my heart anymore, because these wicked people that have done terrible things, they're dead. They're doing okay. They're better off than me. Now, Job did not have what we have today, the completed scriptures. But you remember Luke chapter 16, the rich man and Lazarus? Turn there. Let's look in Luke chapter 16 real quick. Luke chapter 16. The rich man and Lazarus. Jesus is telling this story. A very real story, not if some have said that it's fictional story. But Jesus began in verse 19 talking about this certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. Being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. The rest of this story is, there were those two individuals who had died, but they both were aware of where they were. So Job, in his mind, thinking that death is going to allow me to escape these things, wasn't true. Because we know now that you're not going to be at peace if you're on the wrong side of that gulf. If you're on the wrong side of that gulf, even look what he says. And down in verse number, we'll start up in verse 25. Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime, You receive your good things and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great fixed gulf, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send me to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that they may testify to them, that he may testify to them, that they also come to this place of torment. He knew where he was. So Job, going back to him, Job was incorrect in thinking that death is going to take these things away from him. And then he says, and back in Job chapter 3, he says in verse 24, for my sighing comes before I eat, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes. He can't sleep. He can't eat. He's in a lot of pain. And now his friend, who has traveled some distance to come and see him for the purpose of comforting him, begins to talk. And he says, you know, Job, I've sat here and I've heard what you have said, and I have to say something. I can't remain quiet. I have to say something. And look at what he says in chapter 4. He says in verse 3, surely you have instructed many, and you have strengthened weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. But now it comes upon you and you are weary. It touches you and you are troubled. Job, I've known you. You've dealt with this problem before. You have been able to help other people, but now that the problem is on you, it seems, Job, that you're not exactly the person I thought you were. Later on, we're going to see where he says, you know, Job, practice what you preach. You've told individuals that have been down this road before what they needed to do. But now, all of a sudden, that it's on you, he says, is not your reverence, your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope? What's happened to it? What has happened to the man that I have come to know and love as being my friend? That's what he's saying. And then in verse 7, he begins to change. He turns the table on a little bit. Well, not a little bit, a lot. I don't know if many of you remember what Richard said, that, you know, a couple weeks ago when he was sitting over there, Richard said that, well, maybe he should have just stopped right there and just been quiet. Because remember now, he came to do what? Comfort him. And then he says, remember now whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? That's one of those backhanded, I don't know, what do you call it? I can't think of it right now. I think of it. As soon as I get in the car, I think of it. One of those backhanded things. Was it?
Backhanded compliment.
I was thinking compliment, but that's not a compliment.
No.
Backhanded.
Yeah, it's backhanded, yeah. Whatever you call it, backhanded. Exactly. He's saying that it's his fault.
Yeah.
You brought this on yourself, Job. There's no way that these things happen in your life and you're innocent. This is what he's saying. Then he says that even as I have seen those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his anger they are consumed. What is he saying there? He did something. Well, he's saying that Job, you're responsible for these things. And I have seen what God will do to those that live a life that is sinful, that is evil, that is wicked. And he says there has to be some connection between the life you live and the things that happen. You know, Eliphaz seems to be saying that, you know, there is that element of a man's life in which God is going to pass judgment on. on this earth. Is that true? When is God going to pass judgment on man? On the day of judgment. Okay? Now, here is Eliphaz, a friend coming to comfort, saying to a man that has lost everything, look in the mirror and examine your own life. Is your fault. I believe that this is a clear indication that we as Christians need to really pay close attention to who we call our friends, who we seek advice from. I hope there's no psychiatrist or psychologist in here. But they're very smart people. I'm going to start off by saying that in case there are. But the advice that you get from a psychologist does not compare in any way, shape, or form to the advice that you get from the inspired word of God. There's no comparison. And Eliphaz is a man that understands the righteousness of God. He makes some very profound statements in regards to what God is and what God is capable of doing. He just misapplies it. And that's what's happening in the denominational world today. You find preachers and teachers that know the scriptures backwards and forwards, but they misapply them. John 3:16 is a perfect example. Joe, you like you got something to say? No? Okay. All right. I thought you were getting ready to put your hand up. But now, understand that Job has yet to prove Satan right. All that he's gone through, he has yet to prove Satan right. And the reason is God knew that he was able to deal with all of these things. He knew. What does the Bible say in regards to the things that we're able to bear? How much is God going to allow us to go through something? No more than we're able to bear. And God started this book out by saying that this is my servant. This is a man that understands what it means to shun evil. This is a man that understands what it means to be upright. This is a man that understands what it means to be blameless. And now his friend who knows all of these things, he knows exactly the person that he's dealing with in regards to Job, is saying, look at your own life. He says, you know something, I had a dream. Matter of fact, it was a nightmare, verse 12. And he says that it was to the point that it caused me to tremble. I shaked in my bones. And he says that a spirit passed before my face, the hair on my body stood up. It stood still, but I could not discern its appearance. A form was before my eyes, there was silence. Then I heard a voice saying, and he begins to say what this voice said to him. Now, there's been many discussions about whether or not this actually took place. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. We're going to go by what he said, instead of what someone has wrote a commentary on and what they thought he meant. Now, he says this, can a mortal be more righteous than God? Can a man be more pure than his maker? If he puts no trust in his servants, if he charges his angels with error, how much more those who dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, who are crushed before moth? They are broken in pieces from the morning till evening. They perish forever with no one regarding. Does not their own excellence go away? They die even without wisdom. Somebody raise your hand and tell me, what did he say that was wrong? What did Eliphaz say in regards to what was told to him in this vision that he had? What about any of that was wrong? I didn't hear you. Oh, she was talking. So I take it everyone's in agreement that what he says is actually correct. He didn't say anything that was wrong. But what is he saying about Job? Job, You're not righteous. You're not pure. Because the obvious answer to verse 17 is no to both of those questions. And then he says, if he puts no trust in his servants, and if he charges his angels with error, then Job, think about yourself. Think about your life. You're no better than those. So he's telling him to look in the mirror. And then he says, call out now, chapter 5. Is there anyone who will answer you, and to which of the holy ones will you turn? For wrath kills a foolish man, and envy slays a simple one. This is another one of those backhanded things that I still can't think of. But he's calling him what? He's calling him foolish. And he's calling him simple. He says, I have seen the foolish take root, but suddenly I cursed his dwelling place. His sons are far from safety. They are crushed in the gate, and there is no deliverer. Are you serious? A comforting friend coming to a man whose children have been crushed has the audacity to say that I have seen the foolish take root. And that his sons are crushed in the gate. How many people want a friend like that? I know I don't. At least not in that respect. I mean, there are many things that we can speculate on. But there would be nothing more than that, than speculation. But what we know for sure is Eliphaz was convinced that Job, you're responsible for this. Okay? If you listen to Eliphaz and you take his logic, every time we go through something in this life and something happens that we are going through some type of suffering, Eliphaz is saying, you brought it on yourself. It's your fault. You know? When you backed into that car, you know, and you caused $250 worth of damage. Well, that was your fault. Not so much your fault that you drove the car and hit him, but it's your fault, the one that's sitting in the car who got hit, because evidently you did something wrong. If you have been living a blameless and upright life, then you would have never gotten hit by that car. That's the logic of Eliphaz. It's not the logic of God. But he says that there is no deliverer. And then I want us to look down at verse 8. He says, but as for me, I would seek God. Wonderful statement. Wonderful statement. It's something that we all should be able to say to ourselves. And when we're giving advice and talking to people, if I was going through those things, if I was going through what you're going through, I would seek God. I would go to God, and I would lay everything, all my cares and concerns on God. And I will get my instruction from him. But how did he use that? He prefaced that statement with saying what? It's your fault. And the only way that you're going to get this taken care of is to go to God and say, I'm going to commit my cause, who does great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number. And he begins to tell about the power of God in such a way that I wish I was able to memorize. Eliphaz makes some wonderful statements about the power of God. He sets on high those who are lowly, and those who mourn are lifted to safety. He frustrates the devices of the crafty so that their hands cannot carry out their plans. He catches the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the cunning comes quickly upon them. They meet with darkness in the daytime and grope at noontime as in the night. But he saves the needy from the sword, from the mouth of the mighty, and from the hand. So the poor have hope, and injustice shuts her mouth. Wonderful statement. Still hadn't said anything wrong in regards to God. He just misapplies it. And then, go ahead. Did everyone hear that? She said that he's calling Job a hypocrite. He's saying that, you know, I've known you, Job, and yet there's obviously something I don't know about you because these things happen. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, this is mild compared to the two other guys that we're going to look at, you know, and there's some indication here that he is, Eliphaz is the oldest of the three that are there. So you would think that this guy would be a little wiser than the two other ones. But let's go to verse 17. He says that, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore, do not despise the chastening of the Almighty. Again, true statement, but he's saying that Job, you are being chastened by God.
Because you need correcting.
You need correcting.
That's an assumption.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For he bruises, but he binds up. For his wound, he wounds, but his hands make whole. He shall deliver you in six troubles. Yes, in seven, no evil shall touch you. In famine, he shall redeem you from death, and in war, from the power of the sword. You shall be hidden from the scourge of the tongue, and you shall not be afraid of destruction when it comes. He continues on, and he's saying in verse 27, you know something? You need to listen to what I say because I know what I'm talking about, and we've discussed this matter, and we've come to the decision that is true, and you need to go by what we said.
No, evidently they didn't know there was a devil back then.
You know? She said evidently they didn't know there was a devil back then. But here's some, you ever met anybody? I know none of you have. I know no one in here is like this, a know-it-all. You know? Whatever they say goes. You know, whatever they say is absolutely 100% correct. They're never wrong. You worked for them for years. And I guess the key is you worked for them for years. But here is this man who's saying, behold, this we have searched out, it is true. Everything that I've said up to this point, Job, we have searched out and we have decided that is true. Hear it and know it for yourself. I know it all. I got all the answers. Job, it's a done deal. The case is closed. I've told you what the problem is. I told you what you need to do. Now it's up to you. You don't even need to think about it. Just do what I told you. Then Job begins to answer. And he says, oh, that my grief, we're in chapter 6, were fully weighed and my calamity lay with it on the scales. Then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore, my words have been rash. Job is saying, I wish you could feel the pain that I'm in. You evidently don't understand the amount of pain that I'm in, the depth of hurt, the depth of suffering. And he says, that's why I'm speaking these rash words. There's no excuse to say things that go against the commandments of God. Does a part of us understand what Job is going through, why he's making these statements?
Yeah, but not his friends.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand.
Exactly. They've come to know this man to be able to deal with any and everything that comes along in his life. Because he said that you've dealt with people that have gone through similar things and you've been able to help them, you know? It's almost like Shaquille O'Neal with the Miami Heat, okay? He's a little bit older now. He's a little bit slower, but everybody in basketball still expects him to go out and be a dominant player. No one can stop him. Whatever he wants to do on the basketball court, he's able to do. And judging from a few faces, you do not watch basketball. He's been doing a little of it lately. But for those of you who, anyone don't know Shaquille O'Neal?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right, okay. He's 7'1 and 300 plus pounds. He's a beast on the basketball court.
But he's getting older.
But no one expects him, though, you know, those guys that spend $25,000 to sit up in the, the sky boxes, they don't understand that. We still want you to go out there, and for those $25 million that we're paying you for 6 months, not a great job. $25 million for 6 months. I want you to go out there and perform like you did when you were 21 years old. And here is a friend of Job's that's saying, despite all of these things that you're going through, I still expect you to be blameless and upright. They just don't understand. And that's what Job is saying. You don't understand the fact that I'm hurting. Verse 4 says, for the arrows of the Almighty are within me. My spirit drinks in their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. That true? No, it's not. But the reason that I stopped there is this. You know how a lawyer gets up in a courtroom and he begins to make an argument, and he's drilling that person on the witness stand, and he knows before he even says it that there's going to be an objection, and more than likely it's going to be upheld. But he says it anyway. Why? For the purpose of what?
Making his point
and getting it into the minds of the jurors. You think some of the things that have been said by Eliphaz have sunk into the mind of Job? He may not have agreed with everything that he has said, but look at what he says. When did we see Job take on this belief that God, you are responsible for this? He still hasn't turned away from God now. But look at what he says. He begins to make he talks about these examples, and does the wild donkey bray when it has grass, or does the ox low over its fodder? Can flavorless food be eaten without salt, or is there any taste in the white of an egg? My soul refuses to touch them. They are as loathsome food to me. Oh, that I might have my request that God would grant me the thing I long for. What does he long for? What does he want? He wants death. That it would please God to crush me, that he would loose his hand and cut me off. Again, he's saying, I want to die. He's not saying, I'm going to do it. He's saying that I want circumstances to happen in my life that I will die. But he's incorrectly thinking and saying that it is God that is responsible for these things. He says, then, if I die, then I would still have comfort. Though in anguish I will exult, he will not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. What strength do I have that I should hope? And what is my end that I should prolong my life? Is my strength the strength of stones, or is my flesh bronze? Is my help not within me, and is success driven from me? He's hurting. Well, he said back in the previous, I want to say it's back in chapter 3, he says that I have, at the end of chapter 3, I have no rest for trouble comes, you know. He's waiting for something else to happen. You know, because remember these courses of events. One thing happened, then, you know, before this man finished telling him what happened, there was something else that happened, and it was just, you know, a snowball effect. And it just continued and continued and continued until, you know, it's like, when will I have time to breathe? What's that saying? When it rain, it pours? Oh, yeah. Job, we say that we want to be patient. How many of us are willing to go through what Job went through to obtain that level of patience? I don't want you to hold your hand up. Well, that's what Job said. Job said, Lord, take me. But you see, Satan didn't want him to give up. No. God told him. Yeah, God told him, I want you to do whatever it is you do. God didn't even ask him for a detailed explanation about what you're going to do. But you can't do what? You can't kill him. Okay? You can't kill him. And Satan says that you've put this hedge around him, and I'm sorry that I skipped over this. It's back in chapter 3 in verse number 23. Remember Satan said the hedge were those material blessings? That is why he does not want for anything? That's why he respects you? Yes. Look in verse 23, back in chapter 3. What Job says. He says, why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? Hedged what in? What is he talking about? Satan said that it's those possessions. But what does Job say he's hedged in? A different kind of hedge. What is that different kind of hedge? Sorrow. Grief. He said, I'm stuck. I'm in the middle of all of this suffering. So you see, they're on two different wavelengths already. Satan says that, you know, if you take all of these things away from him, he's going to do this. Job says, I've lost everything, and now all I have is this grief. Let me ask this. Has God left Job?
No.
Remember when Jesus was hanging there on the cross, and he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Had God left Jesus? No. Absolutely not. God had not left Jesus, and he had not left Job. It's just the things that go on in our lives, those things, we know counting all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. We know that. We know it. But boy, I tell you, is it a test? Oh, yeah. What's the difference between a test and temptation? Testing and tempting. What's the difference? Which one does God do? Testing, go ahead, Mickey. Okay. Tempting, Mickey says, we bring it upon ourselves. Tempting is enticing us to do what? To do wrong. Testing, the scriptures say. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's an analysis, if I can use that word. You know? God says that this analysis that you're going to go to, this is going to strengthen you. This is going to make you patient. And I'm not, I got about 2 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minutes. Boy, okay. All right. Boy, I wanted to go so much further. I'm sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I was going to say that tempting is trying to get someone to do something wrong, no matter who's doing it, whether it's a person or the devil. Of course, we know it's not God, but if you want to think in that light, you have to say that he is putting a trick in front of you. Where testing is a calculated effort by a teacher to determine how strong you are in anything. It's calculated.
I like that. Yeah, I can't repeat that, so here.
Oh, man.
I like that. Now, you gotta remember what you said. Say it again.
My voice is shot. A test is a calculated effort by a teacher to understand the strength of a student, but temptation is always a trick. You're trying to get something. You're trying to make something happen that wouldn't necessarily be normal. There's no effort to determine strength of any kind. And just as a side note, while I've got the mic,
yeah, go ahead.
I wanted
That's
to
always a problem when you give somebody the mic.
I wanted,
they always want to talk. Go ahead.
I wanted to say it's interesting that it might have been a good thing Job didn't know God told Satan he couldn't take his life.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Great point. And you know, John 6:45, who does Jesus say is our teacher? God. We're all taught by God. Great point. We're going to pick up. I think we left off in chapter 6. So we're going to pick up from there, and we're going to have to really speed through this because we only got about 9 more weeks in here. So we're going to kind of speed things up a little bit.